finger, made a gesture with it in the air, and laid it on his lips. Then, touching the shoulder of a townsman who stood next to him, he addressed him in a formal and courteous manner.
"I pray you, good sir," said he, "who is this woman, and wherefore is she here set up to public shame?"
"Yonder woman, sir, you must know, was the wife of a certain learned man, English by birth, but who had long dwelt in Amsterdam, whence, some good time agone, he was minded to cross over and cast in his lot with us of the Massachusetts. To this purpose he sent his wife before him, and remaining himself to look after some necessary affairs. Marry, good sir, in some 2 years or less that the woman has been a dweller here in Boston, no tidings have come of this learned gentleman, Master Prynne, and his young wife, look you, being left to her own misguidance."
"Ah, aha, I conceive you," said the stranger, with a bitter smile. "So learned a man as you speak of should have learned this too in his books. And who, by your favour, sir, may be the father of yonder babe? It is some 3 or 4 months old, I should judge, which Mistress Prynne is holding in her arms."
"Of a truth, friend, that matter remaineth a riddle," answered the townsman. "Madame Hester absolutely refuseth to speak, and the magistrate have laid their heads together in vain. Now, good sir, our Massachusetts magistracy, bethinking themselves that this woman is youthful and fair, and doubtless was strongly tempted to her fall, they have not been bold to put in force the extremity of a righteous law against her. The penalty thereof is death. But in their great mercy and tenderness of heart, they have doomed Mistress Prynne to stand only a space of 3 hours on the platform of the pillory, and then and thereafter, for the remainder of her natural life, to wear a mark of shame upon her bosom."
"A wise sentence," remarked the stranger, gravely bowing his head. "Thus she will be a living sermon against sin, until the ignominious letter be engraved upon her tombstone. It irks me, nevertheless, that the partner of her iniquity should not at least stand on the scaffold by her side. But he will be known. He will be known."
While this passed, Hester Prynne had been standing on her pedestal, still with a fixed gaze towards the stranger. So fixed a gaze that at moments of intense absorption, all other objects in the visible world seemed to vanish, leaving only him and her.
"Hearken unto me, Hester Prynne," said a voice.
The voice which had called her attention was that of the Reverend and famous John Wilson, the eldest clergyman of Boston, a great scholar, and withal a man of kind and genial spirit.
"Hester Prynne," said the clergyman, "I have striven with my younger brother here, under whose preaching of the word you have been privileged to sit, and I have sought, I say, to persuade this godly youth that he should deal with you here in the face of heaven and before these wise and upright rulers, and in hearing of all the people, as touching the vileness and blackness of your sin.
Good Master Dimmesdale, the responsibility of this woman's soul lies greatly with you. It behooves you, therefore, to exhort her to repentance and to confession as a proof and consequence thereof." The directness of his appeal drew the eyes of the whole crowd upon the Reverend Mr. Dimmesdale, a young clergyman who had come from one of the great English universities. He was a person of very striking aspect, with a white, lofty, and impending brow, large, brown, melancholy eyes, and a mouth which, unless when he forcibly compressed it, was apt to be tremulous, expressing both nervous sensibility and a vast power of self-restraint.
"Hester Prynne," said he, leaning over the balcony and looking down steadfastly into her eyes, "thou hast heardest what this good man says, and seest the accountability under which I labour. If thou feelest it to be for thy soul's peace, and that thy earthly punishment will therefore be more effectual to salvation, I charge thee to speak out the name of thy fellow sinner and fellow sufferer. Be not silent from any mistaken pity and tenderness for him. For believe me, Hester, though he were to step down from a high place, and stand there beside thee on thy pedestal of shame, yet better were it so than to hide a guilty heart through life. What can thy silence do for him except tempt him, yea, compel him, as it were, to add hypocrisy to sin?"
Hester shook her head. "Woman."